Chair.
Thank you, Jeff, for that warm welcome, and good morning, everyone. It's really nice to be in Seattle. We really enjoy visiting Seattle. Grateful that the smoke has lifted. It had lifted a little bit already yesterday. Grateful for that and hoping for some more rain to ease the land and everyone's lungs. I chose my Dharma talk from one that I did a few weeks ago at Mountain Rain Zendo in Vancouver. Tweaked it a bit. Noticed that I'm recording it because I forgot to turn the recorder on when I was in Vancouver. I'll tell you more about that later. And then after our meeting yesterday with the regional Sangha leaders and just really hearing how everyone has been affected by fire season again this year, a kind of sort of contraction, worry, fear about where we're all headed, state of the world, Michael was saying he heard on the CBC a little radio clip about in the wildfire zones in BC, parents struggling to explain this to their children, why they have to stay inside, and why the sun is all strangely red and the moon is strangely orange, and why that's kind of scary and what that's all about. So after the meeting yesterday, I thought, I wish I'd brought a Dharma talk that more directly addresses the state of the world and how we feel about it and what we can do, and these are things that we do bring up in our Sangha pretty regularly, and we've had some retreats where we do outdoor practice, connecting directly to the forest and the beings of the mountains and waters. And then I woke up this morning and realized, no, this talk does relate to our lives in the world, and I hope you'll see how. I've brought a koan today from the Mumon Khan, or the Gateless Gate collection, one of the classic collections from the tradition of old Chinese teaching stories and dialogues between ancient Chinese Zen masters and their some of them are between two Zen masters and some are between Zen masters and their disciples. And last fall, we have a 8-week practice period every fall. And last fall, we studied and practiced with these koans from the Mumon Khan, but we didn't cover all 48 of them. And this is one of the ones that I had kind of ticked off to come back to and look at that we didn't get to. It's not one of the famous ones. It's not one of the ones that people are familiar with, like, does a dog have Buddha nature, or what is the sound of one hand clapping? It's rather obscure, and it doesn't have an engaging or strange dialogue between Zen masters, famous Zen masters. But there's something that intrigued me about it. So here goes. It's simply two lines, spoken by Zen Master Song Yuan to his students. The first line is a question. Why can't a person of great strength lift up a leg? The second is a statement. It is not with the tongue that you speak. So Sung Yuan is not one of the famous Zen masters in the collection. He was the latest chronologically of all those represented in the collection. He died in 1202 at the age of 71, at a time when Zen in China was considered in decline. Though he was a highly respected teacher, toward the end of his life, he posed three questions to his students. The first two are these two lines. Why can't a person of great strength lift up a leg? The second, we can turn it into a question. Why is it that a person of great strength does not speak with the tongue? And the third was, why is it that a person of great awakening, great strength, does not cut off the red thread? Red thread is the thread of desire. And this is a really important question, so I'm going to include that with the other two today, these three questions that Sung Yuan asked his students. The story goes that no one could answer, and that he died without a Dharma heir. Although one of his monks was declared his successor after his death, because you know you have to keep that lineage going. But before we dig into these three questions, just a few words about the translation. In earlier translations, if you've read some of the translations, you will find this called this koan titled "A Man of Great Strength." But the translation I've used is Robert Aiken's, and he intelligently recognizes that the Chinese word is not gendered. The Chinese character is person. Great strength here refers not to physical strength, but strength of practice, strength of realization. Okay. And then the next phrase, to lift up the lift up a leg. When I read this, lift up, unfortunately, the image that I get is a dog marking its territory. Or a ballet dancer doing leg lifts. Right. So the Chinese character here can mean, same in Japanese, can mean leg or foot, depending on context. So to me, when we are speaking of walking, we usually think of lifting the foot, picking up a foot, putting it down. To go upstairs, you have to pick up your foot and then put it down. You might say, I'm so tired I can't even lift my foot off the ground. Or your mother might have said, pick up your feet when you walk, don't scuff your shoes. So I think my preference is to say, to lift a foot here, but Sung Yuan wasn't talking about literally being unable to take a step, but rather being unable to get up off the meditation cushion and walk the path of the Bodhisattva out into the world. Not being attached to Zazen, not being attached to that experience of enlightenment, but being willing to get up just as we are and walk out into the world and meet the world and respond. The world of suffering beings. So this is the way this koan is usually understood, as a kind of an admonition to the monks not to be attached to being a really good zazen, yeah, really good sitter, right? I'm so good at, you know, I don't budge. I'm really focused on my breath. And, or even to getting that experience of breakthrough. He's challenging us all to take whatever concentration, mindfulness, insight we have from our Zazen and step, get up off the cushion and step into the world, put our practice in action. So the next question, the next statement, it is not with the tongue that you speak, we can turn into a question, why does the person of great strength not use the tongue to speak? Okay. So remember that in the koan literature, why questions aren't asking for an explanation. They're asking us to hold a paradox with a sense of inquiry, to feel the answer in our very bone marrow, and to then to enact it in our lives. So we can see this question as an additional sort of admonition to the monks, not only to get up and express their practice in the world, but to remember that holding forth on the Dharma, blah, 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 form is not different from emptiness, you know, kind of preaching is not the only way to communicate it. Not only with the tongue, right? I was reading a commentary on this koan by Nyogen Senzaki, this book, Eloquent Silence. Some of you probably have encountered it. Nyogen Senzaki was one of the very early Japanese Zen teachers to come to the United States, before Suzuki Roshi, before Mayazumi Roshi. He was an unconventional character. He sat Zazen in Golden Gate Park in San Francisco. He did itinerant jobs as a gardener and cleaner. He wore his ukesa over street clothes, and he had a beautiful shock of white hair. And he said in his commentary, those who digest Zen well should do their work in the world without displaying any trace of Zen. So I'm going to read you a little bit from his commentary on this koan. He says, nowadays, many Soto Zen novice monks are promoted to the rank of priest after just a few weeks, before they truly learn how to meditate, and then they have to preach to earn their own living. I must remind each of them of this koan and say, it is not necessary for speech to come from the tongue. They should become farmhands and work in the field, or else clean the parks and squares while other people are sleeping in the midnight hour. And he goes on, I appreciate the fact that you are trying to learn Zen meditation. I will join you in studying it with pleasure. Every once in a while, I must warn you with this koan, saying, brace yourself and stand up, as your purpose in coming here is not to become stone Buddhas. I appreciate your enthusiasm in copying my lectures and keeping them, but remember that I speak them with shame and tears. I do such a dirty job, this talking on Zen, because nobody else has done it here before me. Please do not show my lectures to any outsiders and say that they are part of my Zen. I have no such funny business as preaching Zen. Whatever I say passes away before you record it. You only catch my yawns and coughs. Isn't that great? I so identify with it. When we first started doing Dharma talks, I just thought, why do we have to record these? Can't we let them just disappear, you know, and be ephemeral? And I would chronically forget to turn on the recorder. And gradually I was persuaded by people who live far, scattered in communities that don't have a sangha. And it really is, you know, meaningful to them to get to hear talks. And so I reluctantly agreed. And so I hadn't forgotten to turn it on in a long time. But I did. I think like Senzaki Roshi was like running interference. So that's why I'm recording it again. Now we'll come to the third question. Why is it that a person of great strength, a person of great awakening, strong practice, does not cut off the red thread? And remember, the red thread is desire. Is that the red thread is the life force that wells up in us as warm-blooded sentient beings. And we couldn't be alive without it, right? Sun Yuan may be saying to his monks, you have been practicing rigorously for years. Now, why are you still full of yourselves? You need to let go of your Zen pretenses, your desire for status and recognition, your jealousy of each other and greed. He might be saying that. You know, even in monasteries, people, you know, there's some one-upmanship that goes on, right? There are a lot, many different ways that we can be attached to being a person of great strength. We can be attached to our identity as a professional person, an athlete, a person of talent, you know, like a musician, an artist, a writer, a parent. We want to be a really good parent, right? A person who is helpful to others. We might have that as part of our strong identity, or we might even identify with being a person of spiritual understanding, be really spiritual. But who are we when those identities drop away, which they inevitably will do, with sickness, misfortune, old age, and ultimately with death? So that's one way we can look at not being being a person of great strength, not letting go of the red thread. But there's another way. There's another way we can understand all three of these questions that goes beyond that duality of delusion and enlightenment, desire or non-attachment, silence or speech, stillness or movement. One modern commentary on this koan is by Zenkei Shibayama Roshi, who was the abbot of a famous Rinzai temple, Nanzenji, in Kyoto for many years. And he argues that if these three questions were only admonitions to the monks, they wouldn't have been included in the Mumonkan as koans. The role of a koan, he says, is to strip away all our established ideas and accumulated knowledge and drive us to the extremity and beyond. Why is it a person of great awakening does not cut off the red thread? Because the person who has seen deeply into the nature, the true nature of being, is truly free, can be alive in this world without being enslaved by greed, hatred, and ignorance, and yet be deeply acquainted with them. That very knowledge, that very deep acquaintance with greed, hatred, and ignorance, and fear, and jealousy, and all our afflictive states, that very knowledge opens our hearts and minds and makes it possible to walk the Bodhisattva path of compassion for all beings. In the Vimalakirti Sutra, some of you may know the Vimalakirti Sutra, the great enlightened layman Vimalakirti, who was legendary in the time of the Buddha, tells those assembled around them, in the sutra, countless disciples of the Buddha, bodhisattvas and beings gather in this little sick room where Vimalakirti lies ill, and they come to ask him how he is. And he says, I am ill because all beings are ill with suffering, and I will be ill as long as all beings are suffering. And then he proceeds for this whole lengthy sutra to give them his teachings. It's great. It's quite a wonderful and actually a little bit humorous. Not many sutras are humorous, but this one is. And he says, he assures the assembled listeners that we have to be able to live in all realms of human existence, to feel the entire gamut of human emotions without being ensnared in self-clinging. He says, the seeds of enlightenment are the body and the six senses, greed, aversion, and ignorance, the five hindrances. The lotus does not grow on the upland plain. The lotus grows in the mud and mire of a damp, low-lying place. Right, so this very life, right here and now, is the ground of our awakening, with our feet rooted in the earth, right, in the muck and the mire of daily life and the smoke. And it's right from there that we open our hearts and minds, we turn it, we open it. Shiba Yamarishi quotes Dogen about this non-dual perspective. He says, these are Dogen's words now. Extinction of thinking and doing is nothing other than every form of doing and acting. Abandonment of words and letters is nothing other than every word and phrase. Shibayama continues, for Master Dogen, extinction of thinking and doing did not mean to be like wood or a stone, be like a wood or stone Buddha, by annihilating thinking and doing, but to be free of all doing and action. For Dogen, abandonment of words and letters was not to be dead silent without moving the tongue. It was to be free in speech and silence, yet to leave no trace of any doing or speaking. This is certainly the wonderful life of the person of great strength. Shibayama also quotes old Zen master Daokai, who said, blue mountains are constantly walking. This is the same saying Dogen introduces at the very beginning of his Mountains and Waters Sutra. I don't know, is there anybody really brand new here who doesn't know when I say Dogen, who that is? Maybe, looks like not. You know, he founded our tradition in Japan. And one of my favorite texts of Dogen's is the Mountains and Waters Sutra, where he says, when you are thoroughly a blue mountain of no mind and walk with no mind, you are truly a person of great strength. Oh, sorry, that was Shibayama. Shibayama said that. Dogen said, to doubt the walking of the mountains means that one does not yet know one's own walking. It is not that one does not walk, but that one does not yet know, has not made clear this walking. Those who would know their own walking must also know the walking of the Blue Mountains. So in July we have a retreat we call the Mountains and Waters Retreat. It's at a lovely spot on the way to Whistler, north of Vancouver, at the base of a volcanic mountain overlooking a lake. And we include outdoor practice in this retreat where people go out and walk in the forest or sit in the forest. And so, just recently, we had that chance to feel the mountains walking beneath our feet, the great earth walking beneath the mountains, right? I mean, the earth is walking. It's all a matter of scale, right? Dogen talks about the mountains flowing and the rivers flowing, the waters, and the mountains walking and our walking and flowing. And to feel the stillness, the walking and flowing of the mountains and waters around us and within us, always changing, is what we do every year at that retreat, particularly. For Dogen, the mountains and waters were the universe, the Buddha body of our lives. And when we know this in our blood and bones, we can enter the world fully and respond to the world around us. I think it's possible this koan appealed to me because I've been practicing with walking a lot lately, or maybe I should say practicing with not being able to walk so well lately. It's not that I can't lift a foot, but that I can't place it down. I can't put my full weight on my left foot because I have this condition called plantar fasciitis. I'm sure some of you have experienced it. It feels kind of like you're walking on a nail. And so I've been practicing equanimity with that, trying not to overdo, trying to do all the things to support healing of that. There's a whole list of things, doing them. But I love walking, right? And I love hiking in the mountains, and summertime is when I do that. Michael and I recently spent 2 weeks hiking in the Canadian Rockies. The smoke was actually not too bad in the Banff area. And before we went, I'd been kind of fretting about not being able to do a full day hike or carry a pack. So I was surprised how happy and grateful I was even to be able to be up in the mountains and walk about 3 or 4 miles. That was about my capacity. I actually felt such joy that I could even do that. And the wildflowers were so vivid and the texture of the mosses and stones. So I wasn't particularly driving at any destination, you know, any endpoint or peak. And all the living creatures that we encountered around us, just living outdoors all day long. Yeah, camping. It occurred to me that maybe there's a sort of metaphorical level about not being able to put your foot down that I needed to consider. The English idiom to put your foot down means to be firm, right? To say no. To be insistent. To set a limit, right? So I want to reflect on that. I want to reflect on that, and I want to reflect on the impermanence of our human bodies. How they gradually wear out, if we're lucky enough to live a long lifespan. I want to reflect on how to walk the Bodhisattva path in this world of suffering. We have to be able to both lift a foot and put it down. To say yes and say no. To live and to die. So there may come a time when I can't walk even those 3 or 4 miles. And maybe I'll just walk in my dreams. Has anybody ever dreamed about hiking? You know, dreamed in the mountains? I have, and a lot, quite a lot. And I had this amazing realization one night. I was drifting off to sleep in that pre-sleep state, and I was trying to remember my dream from the night before, which was a hiking in the mountains dream. And this little file opened up. I Googled, right, dream hikes. And this little file opened up, and all these other dream hikes opened up. And they weren't actual hikes. These are different places. You know, it's not Manning Park and Banff. And these are the dream hikes, and they're in a separate file. And I thought, how amazing. Isn't the mind amazing? That I have a separate file for dream hikes? So we can, you know, maybe I will open that file when I can't walk anymore. I want to read you a poem by Su Dung Bo. No, wrong one. Bo Jui. Two famous old Chinese poets. This is Bo Jui, one of the great, great Chinese Taoist Zen poets, and it's called Climbing Mountains in Dream. Nights hiking Sung Mountain in dream, just a goosefoot walking stick and me. 1,000 cliffs, 10,000 canyons, I wander until I've explored them all. My stride in dream as it was in youth, strong and sure and so free of disease. When I wake, spirit become itself again, and body return to flesh and blood. I realize that in terms of body and spirit, body grows sick while spirit's immune. And yet body and spirit are both mirage, dream and waking, merest appearance. Scarcely able to hobble around by day, then roaming free all night with ease. In the equal division of day and night, what could I gain here and what lose? So in these koans, koan collections, there's always a verse in response to the koan by the person who made the collection. So Zen Master Wu Men, who chose this koan, wrote this verse. Lifting a foot, kicking over the scented ocean, bowing the head, looking down at the four jhana oceans. There is no place vast enough for this body. Please add one more line. So in early Buddhist cosmology, the universe was said to consist of Mount Sumeru at the center, surrounded by an infinite scented ocean, with four jhana heavens extending infinitely above. So there's an infinite expanse laterally through space and an infinite expanse vertically through time is how we could imagine that. So this person of great strength can lift a foot or bow a head and turn the whole universe upside down, is the poem saying. This is a description of boundless mind, the freedom of boundless mind. But then he leaves the last line open for each of us to fill in, to let go of our constricted views and our self-clinging and walk free. Why can't a person of great strength lift a foot? Why can't a person of great strength not use the tongue to speak? Why can't a person of great strength not cut off the red thread? You write the last line, a Wu Men's poem. These are questions we can only answer in living our lives. And how we live our lives does matter. Don't ever doubt that how you live your life matters, makes a difference. These are times where it's easy to feel discouraged. A lot of people feel disempowered by the magnitude of what they see in the news and around them. But each of our lives matters. How we live, how we answer these questions with our lives matters. So thank you for inviting me. Thank you for listening. And let's close with the chant.
Can we take a few questions or comments?
Would
you be willing to do that?
I would be willing to.